Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Hoo-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Huge show. Huge show this week. We have to recap what went on with Oregon. Oregon had a phenomenal recruiting week for their spring game last weekend. We have to preview Oregon State's spring game, who's visiting, who may commit, who's already committed and checking things out. And then in the second half hour of the show, right around 7:30, Oregon State coach Jonathan Smith's going to join the show to talk about their recruiting momentum, because I think things are going better than most fans, I think most recruiting experts would have anticipated without them having won a game. Things are already better than they were at the end of last season. Nothing's really changed, and yet we're seeing a little bit of momentum. But first, the Oregon Ducks, we previewed it last week. We said there could be some commitments. We had on Mace Funa, and after his interview, Lynch, you predicted he'd commit to Oregon. You predicted he could commit to Oregon this weekend. I think we both did.
It felt like such a sure thing after the interview that he was going to go to Eugene and love it and then commit. And, well, it's not to pat myself on the back or anything.
But that's why you listen to the show. I mean, seeing that interview, and good job, Mike Lynch. Great job, Mike Lynch.
I'm proud because I am only just now entering the recruiting world doing the show with you. So, like, my predictions make no sense to anybody because who am I? But I got it right, so I'm proud.
But it does make sense, I think, if you know people. And this is recruiting experts in general. One, you have to have the access. Once you're a recruiting expert, you know, quote unquote there, you have the access and you do the interviews. And then from then on, it's about getting to know the kids and building a relationship. It's exactly like building the actual recruiting bond that the coaches do. You got to get to know the kid. Now, you're not trying to influence them where to choose necessarily, but it comes down to reading people. How well do you read people? And I think so far, you've done a pretty good job of reading people when we cut to you to make your predictions.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's just because they're high schoolers and they think they're being really sneaky and they're not, but
Tyler Shutt got you though.
Oh, he got me back.
Tyler Shutt gave you the okie doke.
That was also my first prediction.
No, so it was.
I'm going to give myself a little bit of a pass for that one, but
I will
I feel like it's kind of easy to read between the lines. You can tell by their answers how passionate they are.
Absolutely.
About a school or a choice, or the recruiting process so far, and you can kind of just get a vibe of what's going to happen.
And we get asked about that. I get asked about that on the text line all the time. When do you ever hear a recruit say he had a bad visit? And that's a fair question. You don't often hear a kid say he had a bad visit, but you don't hear the passion. And when we talked to Mace Funa last week, you heard passion and excitement, big-time talent, and now he's committed to Oregon. When he committed, he was already considered one of the highest rated, in fact, the highest rated linebacker in the history of the program. Since that time, his film has been reevaluated on 24/7 Sports. He is now listed as the nation's number 3 outside linebacker. He's barely, just barely missing out on 5-star status. I think he's 3 or 4 spots away. Now, he has a knee injury. And usually when guys are hurt, it's very rare for them to move up. I don't know how much that's going to impact his senior season. If he's unable to play a full senior season, he's unable to do the opening, some of these summer showcase events, I think it's unlikely he adds that 5th star. But you're talking about a kid who's right on the bubble, and if he's healthy, has a chance to add a 5th star. That's how good a linebacker you got. There's your headliner. Mace Funa is a Duck. That's your big one. If you just get him, you've got the modern-day pairing of Funa and four-star defensive tackle Keon Ware-Hudson right off the bat. And right away, you say, your front seven's more physical. If you're the Oregon Ducks, that's something you need. That's something you've needed really for years, frankly, is a little bit more physical, athletic front seven. They did that already. But that wasn't it. They also added four-star athlete Cameron Williams. Cameron Williams going to play safety at the next level. Like him a lot. There are a lot of people on this West Coast that feel like he is extremely underrated. Now, underrated, he's a borderline four-star. I think some other places have him listed as a three-star. He's going to play safety, but he has offers from UCLA and USC. So when you talk about a kid being underrated, and he's got most of the Pac-12, including UCLA and USC, the in-state big-time programs, you're talking about a kid who's pretty highly rated. So when he's underrated, that means he's pretty special. I think Cameron Williams, really nice addition for that staff, and we keep seeing this. Coach Hayward has some real pull in the state of California. Thomas Graham, California kid. Diamador Lenore, California kid. They're doing a better job in California. They also added four-star athlete Javon Wilson. Now, Javon Wilson wants to be a running back. 6'2", 6'1", 210, 220 pounds, and a bruising running back. But he has a chance to be special at outside linebacker. Mace Funa, I think, slides inside and is a middle linebacker. Javon Wilson wants to be a running back. Oregon made it very clear. We're recruiting you on both sides of the ball. You might play on either side. I think he starts out at running back. Got a chance to be a pretty good running back. But where he looks uniquely special and where I think he has a chance to really rise up boards is at outside backer. And suddenly we look at this group and you look at what Oregon needs. I think Oregon's pretty consistently getting really good running backs. We'll get to that in a second. They've got a quarterback in place with Justin Herbert. I think if you watch the spring game, you feel really good about Tyler Shuck's future. You know you're getting offensive linemen. Where are the questions at Oregon? And it's been on the defensive side of the ball for years. They've been a lead on offense. On defense, you now have a four-star enforcer defensive tackle. One of the nation's top, he's rated an outside linebacker, he's an inside linebacker. One of the nation's top inside linebackers. If Javon Wilson is an outside linebacker, you've got an extreme edge rushing, impactful linebacker, and now you've got a safety who could play either spot and be a very versatile piece. That's right up the middle of your defense. You just improved the middle of your defense, and we're in March. We're in April.
So you're talking about physicality on the line, you're talking up the middle in the defense, and you're talking about the weakest unit the Oregon Ducks have had for a couple of years. And they're improving them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 right here in recruiting, at least stars-wise and on tape-wise, improving that immediately. So, bravo.
Yeah, overall, you have to give Oregon a high grade for their spring game. I gave them an A-. I think they thought they were going to end up with 5, 6, or 7 commitments. They got 4. The guy I didn't mention, Kano Dillon, is a 6'5", 260-pound grad transfer tight end from South Florida. They need help at tight end. He'll come in and add some depth if he thins out, and he's going to have to thin out quite a bit. But
funny,
I've seen
the
him.
The Willie Taggart kid comes to Oregon after Willie Taggart leaves.
Telling, isn't it?
Yes, very telling.
If Kano Dillon can thin up a little bit, even get to maybe 230, there's a chance he helps some depth at wide receiver and is a big-bodied target. Either way, he's going to be a tight end for sure and help them out. But you look at who else they bring in. So you got 3 commitments, 4 with the grad transfer. That's not enough to say just big-time weekend. But you look at how they did. They brought in Jaden Daniels, the nation's number 2 dual-threat quarterback. I think they get an official visit out of him by the end. They hosted Kayvon Thibodeau, the nation's number 1 prospect at defensive end. By all accounts, he was blown away by Oregon. Sean Dollars, the nation's number 1 all-purpose back, had a chance to talk to him. The nation's number 1 all-purpose back. So an elite running back. And he's getting closer to committing. And if I had to guess right now, I'd say Oregon's in the driver's seat. Now, that could change. USC very much in the mix. Washington in the mix. Georgia's offered him. Florida State's offered him. But Oregon looking like they have a chance to get Sean Dollars. We talk about how are you improving your team? You're improving the core of the defense, and you're getting potentially a running back. Jeffrey Carter, the nation's number 3 cornerback. Now, he had an announcement this week, and I thought it was going to be his commitment. He sounded ready as you can possibly be. At the end of that weekend, I think he went home, calmed down a little bit. He released a top 6, but I predicted he eventually picks Oregon. You look at 24/7 crystal ball picks. They had a flurry of predictions that he's going to end up picking Oregon. He's an Under Armour All-American. Again, the nation's number 3 cornerback. He's on campus. And you have to remember, these guys are all paying their own way to be there for the most part. I think there were a couple official visits in there, but for the most part, these are kids who paid their own way. 30, 40, 50 elite prospects were in Eugene. They landed three, again, four commitments if you count the grad transfer. He's obviously not a traditional recruit. Three commitments and right on the fence for six, seven, eight more. Oregon off to a stellar start. And I said it a couple weeks ago, with the way Oregon's recruiting right now, they've got a chance to have the best class they've ever had. Now, we said that last year, and then Willie Taggart bolted, and things didn't fall apart, but they took a step back. If this staff stays together and they have a good fall, this could very well be Oregon's best class ever and a top 10 class. There are some special things brewing in Eugene. Now it's Oregon State's turn. They're hosting approximately 70 kids this weekend. We will preview their big spring weekend as far as recruiting next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Oregon State has their spring game. It is their turn to make a recruiting splash. Listen, I think they've done a phenomenal job. 70 kids coming, again, paying their own way, and a ton of in-state talent coming, and we'll get to that list. But I want people to understand, Oregon and Oregon State are in different spots. So when you look at Oregon's list and see 20, 30, 4- and 5-star talents, don't look at Oregon State's and say, how come they don't have that? They're in different places. And if you have a hard time understanding that or how that could be, I don't know how else to explain it to you. Oregon State doing a very nice job, and I think momentum is headed in the right direction. But until they start winning some games and win a number of games, I think it's going to be, realistically, it's going to be a little bit of a challenge to get 4- and 5-star guys on campus. That said, identifying what you are, being realistic about what you are in recruiting, can make a world of difference. Don't waste your time recruiting guys that you're the third, fourth option for. Go after the guys that are excited about being a part of what you're doing, that will really, truly grind to be a part of it. You can take some flyers, and you look, and they have. You look at like Hank Bachmeier, the nation's number 5 pro-style quarterback. Not visiting this weekend, will visit in the future. I think Oregon State has a really good chance to land him. That's a special 4-star prospect. But I don't think if you look at it and try to compare and contrast, this is still an Oregon State team that's probably going to have a class that's ranked in the bottom half of the Pac-12. Oregon's going for the Pac-12 crown this year in terms of the recruiting rankings. So they're in different places. But I like what Oregon State's doing. And that list, to me, starts with in-state recruiting. They need to identify a brand that is West Coast and in-state kids. And you look at this list, the big thing here is I think they got off to a fantastic start. Fantastic start with Anthony Gould and Kelson Hennessy, a pair of in-state commitments. Anthony Gould, an electric return man, running back, receiver, probably a slot receiver in college, out of West Salem, committed, visiting this weekend. Hang on to your guys. Kelson Hennessy visited Cal, got an offer from Cal. Oregon, he visited Oregon. Oregon is circling, considering an offer. 3-star defensive lineman. I think there's a chance he adds a 4th star. He's visiting this weekend. Corey Stover. Corey Stover is an incredible talent out of Marshfield, 6'5", 220 pounds. He's a multi-sport athlete. He hasn't taken football tremendously seriously in the sense that he doesn't make it a year-round thing. He's not going to do the 7-on-7 thing. And frankly, I don't even know if he's fully invested all the way in weightlifting and doing all that stuff at a college level yet. And yet, he's a pretty special prospect. I think you could make a strong argument. He's right up there with Kelson Hennessy as the best defensive line prospect in the class for Oregon in the class of 2019. He's visiting this weekend. Ashton Adams, Alejandro Castrochase, G.W. Wolford, Richard Australia. 4 of, I think, the top offensive linemen in the state of Oregon. I don't know which one's going to pop. But generally, when there's a group of 4 that are this close together, are they Mountain West Conference guys? Are they Big Sky guys? Are they going to jump up to Pac-12 guys? Generally, one of them, maybe 2 of them, takes that leap as a senior and becomes truly uniquely special. So hosting all 4 of the state's top offensive linemen, they've got Diego Fuima Ono, a 3-star.
Hey, good job.
Thank you. A 3-star tight end. He's been under the radar. I didn't have him on my initial rankings, which was just an absolute oversight on my part, and I apologize to him. He is a talented kid. He's definitely one of the top 10 to 12 kids in the entire state. I just haven't had a chance to see him much. He's not in the greater Portland area, but I think he's talented. And then lay a foundation. When have things worked for Oregon State? We've beaten this to death on this show. They do their best recruiting when they offer first. That's when they have success. So they're hosting four or five of the very best class of 2020 kids in the state of Oregon. That class of 2020, I predict, will be the best class in the history of Oregon. Junior Walling, John Miller, who they offered. John Miller out of Tualatin, a middle linebacker, he's extremely good. He's got a chance to be a sideline-to-sideline, three-down linebacker in the Pac-12 conference. He's visiting this weekend. Andy Alfieri, if you don't know the Alfieri family, they have ties to Oregon State. Obviously, Andy Alfieri's older brother. Joey Alfieri is a standout at Stanford. Andy Alfieri has not gotten a lot of run. He played fullback a little bit, but and then, you know, he's kind of the backup running back behind Trey Lowe. Trey Lowe taken off for Washington. So Andy Alfieri is going to slide in, I believe, into that lead running back role for Jesuit. And you want to talk about Jesuit being on the rise again. They don't have the depth of talent that they've had in past years. But when you want to talk about stars, Andy Alfieri is going to put up numbers this fall. I am really excited to see his development. Might end up being an outside linebacker at the college level. But to me, Andy Alfieri is just slept on. I think he's got a chance to be a four-star prospect as he develops. Calvin Souders. Now, everybody talks about that Central Catholic class of 2020 that's really special. And we've seen some of those guys haven't grown quite as much as we'd like, but they're very talented. The leadership qualities are there. Silas Starr is a freak. He was at Oregon last weekend, four-star prospect. Definitely a chance to be an All-American. He's a top 100 receiver in the country right now in terms of his ranking, or a top 100 prospect in the country at receiver right now. Calvin Souders has a chance to be better. Now, I'm not saying he will be. I'm not saying he is. He's got a chance, and the state doesn't quite know about it yet. He's 6'2", 6'3", great hands, runs good routes, gets out of his breaks well. Calvin Souders is a kid that not everybody knows about that they need to know about. Oregon State, first to know about him, first to host him. Great job there. That's the kind of stuff that makes you different. That's the kind of stuff that puts you back on the radar. And when we talked about him, you know, it was in the fall, really. We talked about it, and I, you know, Lynch, it felt like over and over I just kept saying, missed opportunity, missed opportunity, missed opportunity. Here we are in a similar situation in terms of the star level, but the way they're handling it and the opportunity risks they're taking with younger kids is the other end, where it's not a missed opportunity. They're jumping out in front of things before they happen and trying to make some plays on the recruiting trail.
Well, to tie this back to something that I know very well, if this was the staff in place when Eric Dungy was being recruited, Eric Dungy would have been getting an offer from Oregon State and not going to Syracuse, where I'm thankful he did, but not going to Syracuse because he didn't get any other Power 5 offers. That's the kind of local in-state player that right now Oregon State's saying, hey, we see what you're doing. And as cliche as it always is, and as the coaches always say this, you want to build a fence around the state. It kind of looks like Oregon State's at least attempting to do that. Now, of course, you don't know if it's going to work in a way where all of these kids are going to choose to go to Oregon State. But when you get out in front and you show interest early, we've heard from recruits all the time that that means something. It doesn't mean everything. We've seen a lot of the times those first schools that come in will then get passed when bigger schools come through or their star rating goes up. But for some of those players, they actually stick with the people who the school that went to them first and showed the most interest early, because they built a trust and it wasn't like, oh, I'm good now, so you're going to come get me, random school in the Pac-12 or Big 12. No, Oregon State was on me from the beginning. I like it there, and I'm going to choose there. So I think what the Beavs are doing is betting on the fact that if a couple of these kids pop and get bigger offers, a couple of them will still stay and go to Oregon State because of the relationship that's been built.
That's two fantastic points by you. First, Eric Dungy. I know you say you're glad he went to Syracuse. For people who are new to the show or haven't listened a lot, you went to Syracuse. So
Yes. It's
not you're glad he didn't go to Oregon State. You're glad he went to Syracuse. Imagine if Oregon State just had Eric Dungy the last few years and how much better they would have done.
Gary Anderson might still be there.
Gary Anderson might still be there. And I know they were told that he was somebody to watch and they couldn't comment to me, but I made a point of reaching out to Oregon State and saying, Eric Dungy's a guy you should take. You want a mobile quarterback. Instead, they went the Seth Collins route. he ended up kind of being a receiver, then a quarterback, then a...
And there were issues. And
Eric Dungy would have been a much, much better option, and it would have looked better to the state. The other point you made, and it's, again, a very good point, there are guys that on this list, if you offer first, they're going to elevate their stock. You go back just a couple years ago, Sherwood's David Morris... He got his first offer from Oregon State. He went to a showcase event, and the Oregon coaches, who I thought did in a back then, did an abysmal job of in-state recruiting, asked me who the kid was. They didn't even know who it was. It was David Morris. They're like, does he have any Pac-12 offers? At that point, he had Cal. He had Oregon State. I mean, he was a guy. He was a four-star prospect. He was about to be a four-star prospect on Scout. They offer him, and David Morris stuck with Oregon State. And the narrative, Oregon tried to spin it through people that, well, we didn't, you know, we ended up finding other options and we didn't want David Morris. No, no, no. They offered David Morris. David Morris stuck with Oregon State over Oregon, and he's made an impact. He had like 17 tackles in one game as a true freshman. He's hurt right now, missed some of the spring, but he's got a chance to be really special. So it has worked out.
Didn't Morris get offers from like Stanford and other Pac-12
schools? He didn't quite get Stanford. He got kind of to that point where it was on the fence. You're right, he had interest, but he didn't quite pull in those offers. But when Oregon State offers early, they're getting guys, and what we're seeing up and down this list isn't... It's not even they're hosting the obvious guys. They're not. They're hosting some of the guys down the list that for me, and a lot of the time, I'm 2 years ahead of this stuff because I do it so much. And the high school community so far ahead of the recruiting community where you go, man, that kid's got a chance to be special. They're hosting that kid before the recruiting group even knows about him. They're doing a really nice job. And they deserve to be commended. So we're going to talk to Coach Smith about that. Talk to him about what he's looking for in this spring game. Talk to him about how he's built this momentum and how they've become an absolute database for Oregon high school prospect talent next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Here's Mike with SportsCenter.
It happens. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, featuring Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Really like what Oregon State's doing. They've got an opportunity here this weekend to add some talent. And at the very least, they're doing a great job of bringing talent to campus. So I wanted to have Oregon State head football coach Jonathan Smith on to talk about it. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Really, yeah. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm enjoying the weather finally. It's beautiful out. What a weekend for a spring game.
No doubt. Well, we continue to, like today, we practice you know, in the mornings, and shoot, we've had a couple of awesome days of practice this week, and looking forward to this weekend.
For a new coach, spring matters that much more because you get an idea and a feel for your players, not only on the field, but personally. I imagine for you, the spring game is also very important because it's the first time you're seeing guys really, truly compete. What are you looking for? And maybe it's coach speak to just say, I'm looking for guys who want to compete, but I imagine that is a big part of it right now for you.
No question. Competition, and really, we like to think we're competing every day in practice as we're going. And so I always, you know, you look at the last time you go out, and there'll be some crowd and see how kids respond to being in front of some people versus being just the typical practice where there's not many people watching. So that's always interesting. I like to think it's a culmination, too, the end of spring, and we're playing our best, and guys have gotten a lot of reps and they showed some improvement throughout. And so we'll be looking for flashes of that for sure on Saturday and enjoying it, you know, and pitching things the way we'd like to of 15 days of playing some football again. It has been a great spring. Like you mentioned, getting to know these guys, watch them work. I've been really pleased with the effort and the improvement we've shown.
How much of your offense at this point is installed where you feel like they're going to get live reps added in spring, and then how much – are you going to install in the fall to kind of, you know, keep things fresh and put an identity and a signature on it that is a Jonathan Smith football team?
Well, I think, you know, we definitely don't have 100%. We've got a good amount of it. We got a good amount of the foundation to be able to build off of some of the schemes and formations and things we're doing. A lot of foundation has been put in the spring, and, you know, Brian does such a good job of kind of coordinating that, and I thought he did an awesome job of really looking at this spring and what was a necessity, had to kind of get in and let these guys get some reps at it. And so we're ready to build off of it. And so, you know, how much is in? I don't know. More than half, but not nearly 100% of it. But it's been great to, like I say, lay the foundation and build from here.
Who are a few of the guys that have stood out this spring? And then who are a couple of the kids that are maybe younger that people haven't heard of that you expect to hear quite a bit from in the fall.
Right. I think, you know, you can almost go by position. Some guys have stood out to do some things. I think first things come to mind, I think Timmy Hernandez has really had a good spring at receiver, making plays, contested catches, and, you know, what you're counting on, a guy who's been doing some things. Key Wetzel on the defensive side has been running around and doing, making plays. And, you know, I think the scheme we're running really fits his skill set, so he's shown up for sure. Jonathan Willis has made a bunch of plays at linebacker and done some good things. So, you know, those are just kind of the first ones that come to my head. But like I said, I'd like, as overall the group, the improvement and the work ethic for 15 days has been awesome.
We're talking to Oregon State head football coach Jonathan Smith. Does that still sound new when you hear that? Head football coach at Oregon State as opposed to quarterback? Does it feel new?
A little bit, but I'm loving every minute of it, you know, and being in this role now, the opportunity I had to come back here to a great place and really surround myself with great people, coaches, and then getting to know the people around here that, you know, football is important and it's a great place to go to school. And so I do feel very fortunate to be the head coach here.
As Vincent Ginta and some of the other holdovers from last year's group will tell you, I have been very critical of Oregon State, and I keep it very real when I talk about Oregon and Oregon State. I was critical of Helfrich when he came through in terms of his recruiting effort. So I don't just blow smoke. And so when I say I see a dramatic difference in the way that you guys are recruiting, the excitement is there. You haven't won a game yet as the head football coach, and already the way kids, particularly in the state of Oregon, view you guys, it's vastly different. It's night and day. How have you been able to build momentum without really yet changing the record?
Right. You know, I think that it's important to recruit the state, and some of that, I feel that way is because I experienced that. You know, I was here in 97 to 2001, and we won a bunch of football games, and really there's a lot of guys from this state that were on this team. And so I know there's good football in the state of Oregon. We won't be able to sign our entire class from the state. You know, I got a lot of Northwest ties, and this staff does too. And so we do want to extend the Northwest outside of just to the state of Oregon. But I, you know, California has been a huge state for us in recruiting. We're going to continue to do that. And one thing I definitely like, a positive vibe that's going on for sure. But at the end of the day, we're still going to make our own evaluations. We're only going to take the guys that really fit us. And if people like it, I think that's great.
One of the major selling points for you has not only been your ability to recruit quarterbacks, but the fact that you have Coach Lindgren and Coach Riley in there too. That's a major selling point for quarterbacks on the recruiting trail. Obviously, we can't get into specifics and specific targets by any stretch, but generally speaking, that seems to be a pitch that's going to be very effective in the living room and in the film room with the kids, saying, hey, you're going to have three quarterback experts, and we're not going to nitpick and all argue about different things we like. We're going to be on the same page, and you're going to be a really streamlined guy with a lot of different people who are going to have input on how you can get better. That seems to be working.
Yeah, I think there is some real value. Like you're saying, you know, obviously Brian's coached a lot of quarterbacks and called plays in this league and developed quarterbacks in this league. Coach Riley himself has a long history of, you know, getting quarterbacks to the NFL. And I think beyond just the coaches that are in the building, I think the university itself, there's a lineage now of quarterback play at Oregon State University that you can go on and play at the next level. And there's still, you know, a few of them still playing in that league right now. And so I think you look at the history of the place, and yeah, the staff and the system we're working with, I think there's a lot of benefits for a quarterback to be able to come in here and be successful.
One of the things, and another thing that's really impressed me, we're going to go over a number of things I think you guys are doing right. I think the focus on the West Coast has really paid dividends for you in the spring. Instead of trying to get guys from Florida and Georgia and Texas to pay their own way to visit in the spring, you've gotten dozens upon dozens of kids. In fact, it's in the hundreds, I think, at this point. You had 101 weekend to visit your campus. It seems like the approach that we are focused on being a West Coast school is really resonating. Are you surprised at how well that's been received and how early that seems to have made an impact for you guys in terms of, again, the general buzz being very positive for Oregon State?
Well, I think, I don't know about surprised. I like where it's headed. And I do think the approach that, you know, there's just a bunch of good players on the West Coast. And yeah, we're going to make an emphasis of, you know, they can get here and we can get to them and we're going to know them more. And we know the areas and the brand of football that takes place in Southern California, Northern California, in Arizona. We just know it way better than maybe going a little further. I will say we're not going to just dead set not take anybody from the it's outside the West Coast. But I do think the emphasis that we're making is that, you know, is closer and there's good players here. And we're going to start with those guys as we recruit and evaluate. And so far, so good. And we'll continue to build on it.
I'm a firm believer, having watched the Pac-10 and now Pac-12 for a number of years, a couple decades now for me, that you're always just one really good quarterback away from being competitive in this league. It's such an offensive league, and if you get the right guy in the right system, you can put up points, and if your defense has athletes and they can create some turnovers and you can create some momentum on defense, you've got a chance. I know that's oversimplifying it, but is there a level of that for you where you, if we can be an electric offense and make some plays on defense, we're right in the hunt for a bowl game just maybe that quickly if we get the right guy plugged in at quarterback?
I think there's some truth to the, you know, the importance for sure of the quarterback position. I think, you know, I think things start and end with the quarterback when you look at football in general, football teams, football games. There's a lot that goes in between that start and end, but you got to have a trigger man in the right spot for sure. And those guys make as much of an impact on a game as anybody. There is other guys on the field with those guys. And, you know, so it's of importance for sure. And I like where what development took place in this spring. We've got some talent in the room. Those guys are learning the scheme and they've done some good things. But as the future goes, as recruiting goes, you got to have a trigger man to win some football games in this league. Because this Pac-12 is really the conference of quarterback play.
Absolutely.
As you look at it. And even just in the NFL draft here coming up, those guys are going to be going that have played in this league. So you got to have a trigger man.
We love to talk about in-state prospects on this show. Who are a couple of in-state guys on your roster currently who are going to make an impact for the Beavers this fall? I imagine David Morris is one of those dealing with an injury. I believe he's still dealing with an injury. But who else stands out to you as an in-state kid on your roster that's made some strides maybe this spring?
I think you're right on it with David. You know, he did some as a freshman running around. Blake Brandell, our left tackle, the guy is a good-looking player. He's played a lot of football. We're counting on him to come through for sure. You know, and there is a bunch of guys that, again, like I said, there's a history of kids from the state coming in and contributing. Those two stand out to me for sure, and we got to see how this continues to play out in fall camp. But I won't be shocked if we got more than two guys that are starting for us that are from the state.
Realistically, as good as some of it's going to either grow or shrink depending on how you do this fall. How do you sustain your recruiting momentum that you're building where up and down the West Coast, there's interest regardless of how you do on the field? Or do you think it is all predicated in the end on the record at the end of the year?
There's no question that the winning helps recruiting for sure. There's no question. I will say how we sustain is we're going to sustain our approach and stay disciplined on the way we're evaluating and then in the way we're recruiting and being upfront. I think being authentic in recruiting is important and selling the place and talking about the place in a real way is our approach. And so winning's going to help for sure. There's no question, but it's not the all in all. And we're going to stay disciplined to how we evaluate and how we recruit and not feel confident that it'll turn out how we want it to.
Oregon State head coach Jonathan Smith, I think you were the right man for the job. I think you've done a phenomenal job early. All the best going forward in Corvallis. Certainly seeing early returns on the recruiting trail. Thank you very much for joining me.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Andrew. Take care.
I think the key piece, again, you know, he didn't back away or shy away from that idea that the right quarterback, and, you know, he said there's more pieces to it than that, but the right quarterback can really make a difference. And you look at what he is, and part of the reason I believed he had potential to be the right guy for the job is he's a really, really good quarterback recruiter. And if he gets Hank Bachmeier, the nation's number 5 pro-style quarterback, and they can quickly plug him in and play, they've got a chance to turn things around sooner rather than later. It certainly seems like there's at least a roadmap. And, you know, last year, one of the things I questioned with Oregon State was an identity. What are you on a recruiting trail? Sometimes they sold their facilities. That whiffed with a lot of kids. Sometimes they sold being an in-state program, and then the kid said, yeah, but I only hear from you once a month, and you didn't start recruiting me until I was a junior. So what are they doing? They're talking to these kids earlier. They have a roadmap. They're the West Coast school. They're the in-state school. That's what they're going to be. And they're going to play that and see how it works while being an up-tempo, I think, gamble, risk-taking offense that stretches the field. I think that's where they're going on offense. I think defensively, they're going to blitz and try to make some things happen. Because the reality of the situation is when you're recruiting to Corvallis versus Los Angeles or Seattle or the Arizona schools or wherever, you're probably in the recruiting rankings not going to get the same level of athlete. So you're going to have to make some things happen schematically. I think Jonathan Smith knows that. He's aware of it. And I think he's going to do a good job. I look forward to a really nice spring game. Not only that, but the weather should be good. So hopefully that all pays dividends on the recruiting trail. But we gotta get to NFL draft, Lynch. I want to talk about the NFL draft. People every year say recruiting rankings don't matter. Look at Baker Mayfield. Is that true? We'll talk about it next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
1080 The Fan.
I love and hate the NFL draft every year. The football fan in me loves it because I have my own opinions on a bunch of these guys. I watch college football. I stay home. I don't like to go to Oregon games. I don't like to go to Oregon State games. The experience is nice, but I would much rather be home, usually at my dad's house, eating potato soup, watching football from about 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. That's my ideal Saturday. And I try to get an idea of what I think of all those guys. So I enjoy that part. The part I don't like is the recruiting expert side or the recruiting reporter side, because every year somebody that's like a two-star or a three-star guy gets taken in the top 10 picks, and then there are a flurry of tweets that are like, oh, rankings don't matter. On an individual scale, anybody could be anything. It doesn't matter whether you're a five-star or a not-rated kid. You have a chance to change the way you're rated. Generally speaking, though, the rankings are pretty dang accurate. 24/7 sports reporter Kevin Wade tweeted this out, and I saved it because I thought it was interesting. He broke down the 2017 NFL draft in the first round. In the first round, there were 11 five-star guys taken and 12 four-star guys taken. 72% of the first round were considered blue-chip prospects coming out of high school. 72%. Now, football's different than basketball. In basketball, you're a year away. People don't do this really with basketball rankings because if you did, you'd be bored. There's 80% are blue-chip kids. The other 20 came from out of the country. Because they're 1 year away, and the NBA is much more willing to base things on projection. You're trying to project how a guy's body's going to fill out. Sometimes a guy switches position from a tight end to a defensive end, and then he's a whole different kid than he was in high school. 72%, Lynch, to me says people are doing generally a pretty good job identifying talent. And when I go to the opening, and I don't have a strong evaluation every year on guys, but I've gone for 4 years now, 5 years now, and there are always, every year, like 6-7 kids that I go, yep, playing in the NFL. And basically every single one of those guys, because they're so head and shoulders above everybody else, basically all those guys that I've picked out over the last 4 or 5 years have been first or second round picks. I think the recruiting community does a pretty dang good job.
It's interesting you bring this up, because I've seen plenty of articles where they discuss how a lot of players drafted in the NFL were unrated or were three stars and are super successful. But I think that, I guess, tends to be rounds 2 through 7. The successful players aren't always the ones who are highly rated. They were the guys who had to work their ass off and actually get into great football shape and be a good player. But I mean, right about the first round, the most transcendent players are transcendent for most of their careers in football from high school on. And it's very rare for a no-star guy to then all of a sudden shoot up to the number one pick or whatever you want to say, the top 20 picks in the draft. It's very rare for that to happen because a lot of the times they're just not as talented.
The other big thing that people forget is most years there are between 25 and 30 five-star kids. So guys redshirt and things like that happen. But generally, in a given year, there are only 30 five-star kids in the nation. So if we go to the draft and fast forward, it stands to reason that approximately 30 former five-star kids are eligible for the draft every year.
Which is probably a little bit generous because kids flame out or they leave or they stop playing football.
It's probably less than that that are available. Yeah.
It's probably like 20 or 15 even.
So
after a three-year college career?
In 2017, 11 were drafted in the first round. So even if we say 30, we do that, we'll give you 30 instead of 25. That still means 33% of the guys that were projected to be stars ended up as first-round NFL draft picks 3, 4, 5 years later. I don't think people understand. You can watch rookies in the NBA sometimes and not get it right projecting them 3 years later. And they're actually at the right level. Imagine trying to watch film and project high school kids who are going to add sometimes 60 pounds and grow inches, multiple inches, and try to project who is going to be a star. I just think it's overstated. Yes, Marcus Mariota was a three-star prospect and ended up being a big-time talent. Yes, Baker Mayfield was a two-time walk-on and ends up being the number one pick. But generally speaking, the rankings do a pretty good dang good job. There's a reason that over the course of the last 5 to 10 drafts, I think over 50% of five stars get drafted. About 25%, I believe, of four-star gets drafted, and then less than 10% of three-star athletes get drafted. It means generally people are doing a pretty good job. Lynch, you've had a long day, man, doing updates. How you feeling? Because you have to do the rundown of the whole draft, it seems like, every half hour.
Well, it's not even that. It's just I'm listening to triple and quadruple audio sometimes because I have to listen to Isaac and Suk and then listen to the draft and cue them for when they're ready. And then I have to cut all the draft clips up and save them into our system while I'm listening to both. So it's just the second 5 o'clock hits, it's a whirlwind of NFL draft. The fastest 2.5 hours of my life because it's over and it's done. So it's good. I'm happy.
Proud of you. Next week, we will recap Oregon State spring game. How did the recruits feel about it? We will also have on Carroll College assistant coach to talk about what they're doing. They are spending an entire month with parts of their staff in this state trying to recruit it. Again, that's next week on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Thank you very much for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.